Step one, animatronic dinosaur. Step two, figure out a business
question
plan.
Mark.
Step three, profit.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
it'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That train is off the track.
I feel like you can't just like jump through Neptune and be okay.
Just prepare to.
What the show needs is more dogs and bears and chickens and stuff.
Yeah, so just prepare to be a watch and unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Unbeatables, your favorite Pacers radio cast. It is Monday, May 29th, and this is episode 251. Currently recording from Eugene, Oregon. I'm the enforcer, John Harper. With me is one of our analysts, the bartender, Jonathan Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? I'd like to shout out the enforcer this week. Spending a long Memorial Day weekend here in Eugene, and it has been awesome. The weather's great. I assume the weather's always great. So.
Yes. This is what it's like 365 days a year.
Moving here quickly.
Exactly.
Soon. So thank you for that. We're 2 men in it. Everybody else is out having Memorial Day barbecues or something.
Yep. Everybody's barbecuing and beers. So good on them. Happy Memorial Day, everybody out there. This week, we're going to talk about the finals and other newsworthy NBA topics, if we can think of any.
It should be fun.
There's nothing.
It's just us hanging out.
There's
really
nothing going on but Clash of the Titans right now. That's the only news.
Right.
Before we get started, we do want to let you know you can get in touch with us. Shout out at theundebeatables.com on Twitter at Undebeatables. And our website is theundebeatables.com. All right, well, let's get into it. Obviously, everybody's looking forward to June 1st, final start.
That's right. The three-peat.
The three-peat?
I don't know. What is it?
The rematch?
What do they call it? It's the rubber match, right?
It's a rubber match, yeah.
Sure. So this is the first time in NBA history that the same two teams have met three finals in a row.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is historically significant, I suppose.
Obviously, given that statistic, it's the most important series that's ever been played in basketball history, so... And nothing could ever be better.
So are you excited for this?
Yeah, I am. I mean, this is sort of the collision course that we've been on all season.
Sure.
I mean,
we kind of predicted this at the beginning of the season, sure.
To the extent that I watched basketball this season, this is the moment I was waiting for. So I'm going to try and be as excited as I can about it. My team's not in it.
Right. Well, there's also been this huge delay, which has kind of been frustrating. You know,
been anticlimactic.
It has been. Like, both. So I guess Cleveland didn't sweep out. They lost one to Boston, but Golden State did sweep to this point. So, like, basically, there was 9 days between basketball and the finals or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're all just, it's like, is basketball still going on?
Yeah. It's like a mini vacation in the playoffs. Well, so this matchup, obviously the big difference this year is Kevin Durant is now a Warrior.
It's a minor difference.
That makes LeBron's task a little bit larger.
Former MVP, one of the top players in the game. He was on the All-NBA second team, and maybe only because of injury. Maybe he doesn't top LeBron or Kawhi. They both had amazing seasons, but potentially the third best forward in the league right now. Just got added to a 73-win team.
Seems like cheating.
Yeah, a little bit. How many did they win this year?
67, maybe?
That's not bad. It was the best three-year run of any team in NBA history?
Yeah.
So they're real good.
Yes, they've had a pretty good run. It's a good time to, you know, live in San Francisco, I guess.
Well, and
with all your money and electronics and dynastic basketball team.
Sure. because they are so good, because the Warriors are so good and they added Durant, is there some sense that they have to win this title? I mean, do you feel like if they only win one out of three of these titles, that that's a failure for this certain group of people in this franchise?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too early to say. To me, this is a new Warriors team. The Cavaliers, it was all that the Cavs could do last year. They had to shut down one of the greatest offenses we've ever seen for 4.5 minutes in a finals game.
Right.
To crawl back from a 3-1 hole. I mean, that was an improbable victory. Great basketball, though, it was.
Sure.
It was really amazing, but it was against all odds. And, the Warriors easily could have won that, and they'd be staring down their three-peat right now.
Sure.
Right? So, the other part of that, and maybe the storyline that I'm most interested in for this finals is how's Curry going to play, right?
Okay.
He hasn't necessarily had great success in the finals during his career. He's going to have that on the top of his to-do list. Obviously, he wants to win, but he wants to play better.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's healthy. He's having a heck of a playoff run to date. You figure Durant will do Durant things. I mean, the guy's basically unguardable anyway. You've got Curry out there shooting, 50 and 40 and 90 for a 7-game series. It's awfully tough to see how they lose. But as far as their legacy goes, like I said, I mean, whichever way it goes this year, they're going to have another chance.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
So
you expect them to be back the next few years?
I think they have a reasonable expectation that they should win this year. I think that they have that. But it doesn't close the door on anything if they don't win this year.
There's a dynasty already. And,
yep.
and a further dynasty in the making. I mean, anything can happen in the NBA. I mean, you can have injuries. They could lose one of these big four to a free agency or something like that.
Draymond could just start kicking people in the locker room.
Sure. Things can fall apart. I mean, you've got Steve Kerr dealing with some real health concerns with his back issues. He's not even able to coach right now for them.
But doesn't that just give them the win it for the Gipper thing? Like,
sure.
Make them even more imposing?
Because
it's not like Steve Kerr's not out there game planning. His back is all screwed up. It's not like his brain doesn't work.
Right, sure. So he's had plenty of time off to go ahead and game plan for.
All he can do is lay in one place and watch game film, and I guarantee you that's all he's
been
done
doing.
For,
sure.
Yeah. He hasn't slept in weeks.
Yeah. Well, you had some stat about. Like, basically, the big four of Golden State haven't lost a game in 3 months or something like that?
Yeah, 128 days. The Warriors, you have to go all the way back to February to find their big four, meaning Klay, Steph, Dre, and KD, on the court for the same game where they've lost. They're 27-1 in their last 28, that the Warriors as a whole.
Right.
And that one loss came with Klay sitting.
Okay.
In April.
So they should feel confident if they've got all the guys.
I mean, they're rolling. They're rolling. They're the first team to ever go fo-fo-fo.
Right, right.
And obviously they were installed as favorites to win. They got a lot of good things going for them. Is there a storyline that you're super interested in? What's the most interesting storyline here for you?
So I think for me, this is just another notch in the belt for LeBron and his incredible career, right? So he's now gone to 7 finals in a row?
Yeah. No, this is 8, isn't it?
Well, he's been to 8 finals.
Oh, that's right, because the one was from when he was...
When he was, yeah, like...
He was 20.
Yeah, I think he actually was 20. And he took his ragtag Cleveland team all the way to the finals. So that is incredibly impressive. 7 finals in a row. Nobody has taken 2 franchises to 3 NBA finals each. Is that right? And now LeBron's done it four and four.
Well, no, because superstar James Jones.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. James Jones has also done it.
Dragging his team, kicking and screaming, four and three.
Along with LeBron.
Along with LeBron.
So, yeah. I mean, on as far as that goes, whether LeBron... historically, what happens to LeBron's legacy if he loses this game? I mean, he's not a favorite in this finals at all. He's going up against one of the greatest dynastic teams to ever be put together, when you look at their regular season records. Do you feel like if he loses this, anything changes, or is the record just in getting there continually? And
I mean, what's next for LeBron? He's already become the all-time postseason scorer in NBA history.
Sure, he's got all the minutes and
he's
all
that. He's got all the things. He's right. The first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right.
He's brought success to two different cities.
Right. He got Cleveland its first championship to the city since 1946.
He made it so people knew where Cleveland was. Or 64,
sorry.
People know where that city is now.
So you say there's nothing left for him to be done. If he gets to the final three more times and loses all of them, he's already...
I mean, the only thing that's going to happen is, you know, the argument that he's the GOAT will be less compelling.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's the only... LeBron is, you know, he's a top five all-timer, right? Sure. So it's just how many he wins, and that's just how you're parsing out the really, really great from the greatest. So, I mean, no one's going to look at this year... I mean, they could get swept by this team. They won't, but they could. And it wouldn't matter that much to LeBron's legacy, right? Because he'll still have gotten his team where it was supposed to be. People who are basketball nerdists will know that the Warriors cheated.
Right.
And
they rigged the system.
They broke basketball.
They did.
And, you know, it kind of is what it is. I think people will remember that much less than LeBron coming back last year from down 3-1, right? I mean, that's a real notch in the belt, and no one can take that away at this point. So, more rings are better, but because the expectation's not there, if he does win a championship with a lesser cast, certainly that's a plus for him, but it's not necessary for... It's not going to change anyone's perception of LeBron.
Yeah, except the haters.
They already hate him.
Right.
By definition.
Right. You know, we did our predictions on the last show, right? As a four-man pod.
Mm-hmm.
I think Joey had the Cavs in seven. I think Jason had Warriors in seven. You had Warriors in six. Mm-hmm. And I had Cavs in six. Mm-hmm. I got made fun of a little bit on the pod. And rightfully so, because no one is predicting the Cavs to win the series. They're massive underdogs. But I feel like LeBron is... just playing amazing basketball, and it's destiny.
Yeah. LeBron has been playing unbelievable in these playoffs, playing 40 minutes a game. His numbers are up. But his teammates aren't. Kyrie is not up in his efficiency from last year. Kevin Love is scoring a little bit more efficiently, but he's doing that from the three-point line, so that means his rebounding and blocks are down. They're scoring, I don't know, some outrageous 10 points a game or something.
Right.
But they're still not quite there defensively.
Sure, and the Warriors are scoring like 118 a game, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to have to figure out how to crank up. The team has the skill, the Cavs, I mean, have the skill to go through stretches where they can lock people down, right? I mean, we saw that in that game 7 where they shut down Golden State for 4 minutes.
I mean, they were a much better defensive team last year.
Yeah.
Seemed like. I mean, the personnel is similar, but for whatever reason, this season they have struggled defensively.
Well, defense is hard.
Defense is hard.
Nobody likes playing it.
No.
Scoring is way more fun.
Scoring gets the girls.
Chicks dig the long ball.
Chicks dig the long ball.
So, speaking of historical context, you know, it doesn't much matter for LeBron necessarily, but if the Cavs were to win this, you know, now you got Kyrie and Love with two titles each. Does that put them in conversations of like Hall of Fame at that point? Like,
well, I think James Jones is now shoo-in.
Okay. If he gets his fourth title, it's kind of hard to keep him out, right?
I mean, you know, if you're putting Robert Horry in at this point, don't you have to put James Jones in?
Right.
I mean, just every bit as spectacular a career. It's just a luminary. I don't know. I mean, Kyrie's still so young.
Right.
I mean, he'll be in the Hall of Fame someday. But he's just, he's going to do a lot of great things in between now and then. Especially if he figures out that the Earth is round at some point. I feel like thinking the Earth is flat should affect your shot somehow.
Well, it definitely should go into the mind of voters. Like, can we elect crazy people to the Hall of Fame? I mean, I guess Michael Jordan's in there.
Clearly we can. We approve that. We actually encourage.
We encourage crazy. That should be on the front of the Naismith.
Yeah, I think it is already.
That's their tagline.
Yeah.
We encourage crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that it does that much for Kevin Love. He's just kind of an outside looking in kind of guy.
I mean, he's the third best player on a championship team. He had fantastic numbers when he was playing in Minnesota.
He did when he was the go-to guy. He absolutely did. But, you know, he's also the guy that everybody talks about trading every year.
Right.
You know, sure. I it's not necessarily something that Hall of Fame voters think about, but it tells you what the temperature's like on Kevin Love at any given time. If something were to go, they would trade him for the right piece in a heartbeat.
I agree. But I think my argument is, I think right now with the one title, he is on the outside looking in. But if he gets a second, then maybe that changes the conversation.
He needs like four.
All right. Maybe he'll have a long career and continue to rebound. And
if his
numbers go up. And
if
you know,
he
historically numbers
somehow manage to stay on the LeBrons for a long period of time, then he should be all right.
Yeah. He should be... making sure that there aren't good players out on the trading block.
Yes.
I don't know how you do
sabotaging
that.
Sabotaging them constantly.
A lot of kneecapping.
Yeah.
Well, on the other side, historical context for a guy like Durant, right? So, I mean, we're talking about one of the great scorers this league has ever seen. He's a one-time MVP. Does him winning a title by going to the best team sort of affect how you feel about that title? Is it like a cheat title and it doesn't count as much?
I think my normal argument for this is that no one ever remembers this stuff when they move around, right? I mean, guys, you know, you just, when you look back in 30 years, people just look at how many rings you got.
Sure.
I think that this is a bit of a special case. I think that Kevin Durant did something really different here. And I think that may be something that people do remember. So regardless of what he does, it's probably going to be tainted in some way or another.
Sure.
In a lot of fans' minds, right? Because people are very opinionated about it. My personal take on it is, you know, Kevin Durant did what he thought was best for himself, so I don't begrudge him that. You know, it certainly affects parity in the league, but the people responsible for parity in the league are the NBA home office, right? So if they don't want stuff like this to happen, then it's their job to make the rules to stop it from happening.
Sure. No time in NBA history has a former MVP joined a current MVP, right? So that's what happened.
Yeah, that's what happened. And they're a better team. And Golden State's gotten very lucky because they had room to sign him because Steph Curry, a two-time MVP, is not making any money.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's just sort of a rare confluence of events that allowed that to happen. Great for Golden State, not good for the Cavs this year.
Right. Or the league. I mean, is this good for the league? People make this argument all the time, right? Dominant teams, get interest, right, for the finals. Does it lower interest during the regular season? I mean, I guess we as Pacer fans were still very into our team, even though we had no chance at a title this year.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you're a hardcore, but for a casual fan, do you kind of just not really pay attention to the season because you kind of know who's going to get there if it's, you know. The ratings were really high back when the Bulls were winning all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thinking, right? When you've got, you know, two great teams and a great rivalry, that's great for the finals ratings. And during the season, people just love to watch the dominance of a great team.
Right.
I mean, regular season basketball, it can be a slog if you're watching 82 games a year.
Sure.
Right? So it is fun to watch somebody go out there and make art out of it, which is, you know, what the Golden State Warriors do all the time.
Sure, and break a bunch of records.
Yeah, they're just shattering records every night.
Right.
I mean, if the NBA thought that there was something wrong with their product, they'd change it.
Right, and it's going well for them right now.
It's going just fine.
Yeah.
So, if they don't have a financial incentive to change something, they won't. So, if everybody decided to stop watching basketball because the Warriors were too good, something would probably happen. But
right.
That does not seem to be the case. So, don't hold your breath for the league taking over the Warriors and trading Durant to Indianapolis. That's probably not what's
That was my to. Only hope, really. That was how I was going to keep Paul George. I was just going to, they were going to come in and break up the monopoly.
Nice.
Give the Pacers Durant, and we're going to keep Paul George.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Obviously, everybody's looking forward to the offseason right now.
It's workouts. What we talk about.
Pre-draft workouts have already begun. Team is hard at work scouting out the future of the franchise. So it'll come at the number 18 pick.
Okay. You got a lot of guys you like at the 18 pick.
Oh, I mean, we're going to find somebody who's going to change the face of the franchise.
So Pritchard now has taken over basketball operations. Larry Bird has been sent to a farm upstate.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. With my cat from my youth.
is now a special advisor, I guess. And Pritchard's is been known to be aggressive in the draft. He likes trading up and down and trying to get stuff done. At least he did that in Portland. Do you expect us to try to do anything on draft night?
I don't know. With Pritchard, you can pretty much always expect that he's going to go after it. I don't know if what we want is a draft prospect. I think we want a help now guy for Paul George. So it may be that even if we do trade up, we're somehow parlaying that into a trade or a sign and trade or who knows. But I'm sure he's exploring all the options, and it's always worth watching when Pritchard's in charge on draft night because he almost always does something.
Yeah. I think it's probably his favorite night of the year, right?
Probably. Yeah. And it's the culmination of a lot of work for these guys, so he definitely likes to push it as far as he can. I'm sure he's got some guys circled.
Well, it's funny, he said in his sort of interview as the new president of basketball operations, he said he was always the guy come up with crazy ideas, and Bird was more of the we've got to stay steady with our patience, culture, stuff like that. Don't just trade guys willy-nilly. Which is funny that Bird was that. Yeah, exactly. Because he did some of that during our dominant season a few years ago that screwed up the chemistry. Maybe he's talking about since then. Maybe Bird learned a lesson from that.
Not judging by last offseason.
Yeah, good call. Good call. Well, if Pritchard has learned that he doesn't want to just make trades for trade's sake... he definitely has to make some trades for Paul George's sake.
Yeah.
The news coming out from Adrian Wojnarowski.
Well put.
Thank you. Is that both Boston and LA look like they're reticent to trade their 1 and 2 picks at this point. So I think last episode we talked about, hey, if those trades are out there, we probably need to move Paul George. It sounds like those trades might not be out there.
Yeah, it looks like the pool of teams that are willing to trade with us has shrunk considerably. Maybe we can still talk Hawks or Nuggets or someone into trading with us, but it's likely going to be for pennies on the dollar without those two teams driving up the price.
Right. That is not good for the Pacers.
It's not good. I mean, it looks like at this point Magic's pretty sure that he'll be able to get Paul George in free agency if it comes to that.
So why give up assets?
So why give up assets? And
Boston's pretty convinced that that Fultz or the one pick is going to be a franchise player for 10 years as opposed to a 1 year rental from PG.
Yep. And frankly, they looked pretty good without their best player in the playoffs playing the defending champs. So I think that they're heartened with what they have on their roster right now. I don't think they're, Danny Ainge doesn't need to do anything drastic besides make a good choice with the one pick overall.
Sure.
Which and, is not that hard.
Right. and he can free up some cap space and throw a max or a near max at somebody out there. There's rumors about reuniting Gordon Hayward and Brad Stevens.
Oh, that's happening.
Yeah. So, I mean, do they need Paul George at that point? They don't need to give up assets for it. So Pritchard has said that he's very anxious to build a winner around PG and that he has no intent of losing Paul George in 2018. I'm glad he's confident.
Yeah. So what's the plan? We're just going to play him 48 minutes a night so he makes an All-NBA team?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good start. Pritchard also said that it's a priority to bring back Teague. He really liked what Lance brought to the table. He thinks Lance and Teague in the backcourt were really something special and that he wants to kind of keep that going for a full season. So maybe that suggests either that Lance is the starting two or... you'll at least see a lot of him coming in off the bench and playing along with Teague.
Well, I mean, Lance helped with everything. Yep. I mean, even though it was a small sample set, we went from, essentially 27th in the league in rebounding without Lance to 13th with him. He helps with scoring off the bench.
He's another ball handler.
He can play defense. Right. So he does fix a lot of the problems that we have.
He's way better than Monte Ellis.
He's way better than Monte Ellis.
So we've got to move that contract. I think that's got to be high on Pritchard's list.
I don't think there's any point in moving that contract. My argument is you don't move that contract unless you're pretty sure that you can get the guy with the money.
So, do we think we can get a guy for, that if we trade away that contract, do we really believe that we can go out and get a Paul Millsap. That's probably pretty, I mean, that would fix a lot of things on our team, but that's highly unlikely is what you're saying.
It feels unlikely to me.
So he just turned down $20 million from the Hawks to get paid more than that. The max, I think, is between like $30 and $35 million in the first year. So, you know, he will find himself somewhere between that $20 million and that $35 million range next year.
Yep.
The Hawks may offer it to him, but they did not offer Horford the max, and that's why Horford went over to Boston when this similar situation came up last year for them. So there's a chance there, but we would have to trade Ellis to get that done. So, and there's, you know, does Millsap want to come play for us? He wants to play for somebody who's going to pay him at this point, it sounds like.
Yeah, but he probably also wants to play for him. That's the thing with Atlanta, right? There's, you know, before the trade deadline, Millsap was on the trading block. Right. So I don't know that he has a whole lot of love for the Atlanta organization right now.
Right.
Obviously, they pulled back from that, and now he's all kind of all that they have.
Right.
So they're very interested in keeping him, but they may have already burnt the bridge to some extent. They're not in a great position to compete in the East or anywhere outside of the college ranks. They'll throw whatever money they have to. They're not doing anything else.
Right.
But I just, you know, he wants to go play for somebody better.
Right. Maybe he wants to. That is. Maybe he wants to play next to Horford again in Boston.
He would seriously consider that contract.
Mm. Oh, man. So
that would fix a lot of problems in Boston, too.
Yes. Exactly. Well, I mean, everybody's just trying to figure out how to, you know, a lot of the East is just trying to figure out how to pick up scraps and try to get closer to compete with LeBron and the Cavs.
Right, which is a fundamentally flawed.
Right. Whereas I think the Pacers are interested in trying to compete with the Cavs in as much as it would lead Paul George to want to re-sign with us. You know?
I mean, if we could tank next year and it would mean keeping Paul George, we would tank and win 10 games.
Right.
We don't, I mean, that's sure. Our only goal right now. But it's just so it's still so difficult to see the road to it. If there's no offers out there, I mean, you got to do the best that you can, and you know you're right. Try and convince yourself that picking up pieces is going to somehow make you compete with the LeBrons, but I just don't see how that's possible. I mean, the reality is, does anybody really have a chance to win a championship in the next 5 years if you're not living in Cleveland or San Francisco?
Probably, Oakland? Probably not. Right, I mean, and. But Paul George has to see that, right? And it's not like the grass is greener in L.A. I mean, maybe the grass is greener in L.A.
I think the grass is literally greener in L.A.
Damn it. Oh, well, so if there, basically what we've learned is that there probably aren't trades out there for him this offseason. And we'd essentially just be getting pennies on the dollar for a superstar. So we've got to figure out how to make this better. And you know, what Pritchard has said is we've got to get tougher. We got to get better on pick and roll defense. He said the reason that Miles Turner was the third in the league in blocks this season is because we gave him so many opportunities.
You know, we did.
We did. We did. Thank you, Monte Ellis, and your pick and roll defense.
Miles Turner owes you a beer?
Exactly. Maybe he was just doing it for Miles' stats.
Just bad. No, bad the stats.
So, I mean, if he knows that there are guys out there that can... I mean, maybe he... I'm sure he knows there are some guys out there that he's got an eye on that he thinks can make us better at that. To make us tougher. He also is interested in sort of positionless basketball where everybody can ball handle and everybody can shoot threes and everybody can rebound. That's kind of what everybody wants right now, right? So yeah, those guys are going to be hard to come by.
Yes, big athletic fives who can score a lot from anywhere on the floor or anywhere on the floor. Yes, those guys are in demand right now. and they always will be. The problem with our team last year, the way it was constructed, and we've talked about this many times, the pieces didn't fit for what we said we were trying to do. And Nate, you know, in his mind, was doing the best thing that he could by changing the emphasis from pace to defense. But then we couldn't rebound anyway, so it didn't matter. It really doesn't matter if you play good defense if you can't rebound.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, it's great to get better at defense, but we got to have some guys who can rip down some boards, right? You know, is Taj Gibson... he's not going to help you stretch the floor necessarily, But if you've got him playing your starting minutes at four and you move Thaddeus Young to the bench, does that move the needle for you?
I think it makes us better.
You know, if you upgrade your bench and you say point guard X.
Probably maybe Lance is a 1-2 off the bench.
Potentially Lance, GR3, Thaddeus Young, center X. Kevin Serafin for your money.
There you go. Right. I mean, that's not bad.
It seems better. It seems to make more. I mean, Thaddeus Young just makes that make more sense. I mean, he can't really rebound either, but at least he stretches the floor. If you're not going to be able to rebound, at least stretch the floor.
Right. Well, the problem with that scenario is that we don't have a two guard. I mean, GR3 or Lance is going to have to be our two guard if we don't bring back CJ Miles. And there hasn't been a lot of discussion from Pritchard didn't mention his name at the press conference. Doesn't mean we won't bring him back for the right money, but...
I mean, when you really look at it, CJ Miles may be a bit redundant on our team. I mean, we like JR3's defense better.
Right.
We think he's going to be a solid 3-and-D guy.
He's younger and cheaper.
He's cheaper. He's got more upside. He's certainly not as reliable with his 3-point shot right now, but there's no reason to think that's not going to improve over the coming years. So, part of the problem with our roster last year, again, was redundancy, right? We had all these guys who did the same darn thing, right? Like,
and none of them at an elite level.
Right. We had 18 combo guards. That's our whole lineup. Like, just because you have 18 combo, that doesn't make you positionless. That makes you small and
right. Bad confused. At pick and roll defense.
Yeah, exactly. Being positionless isn't the same as being a tweener.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned Nate. Pritchard has said that he's bringing Nate back. We already discussed that was going to happen. I was surprised how certain he was about that. Here was his quote. When you go through some hard times, you realize who you want to be with in the franchise. I'm telling you 100%, Nate is a guy you want in the franchise all day, every day. He understands big pictures. He knows I got his back. I know he's got my back.
Well, I understand pictures too. I understand pictures better than writing.
You're good with pictures.
I'm good with pictures. I've never said that I don't want Nate in my organization necessarily. Like, Nate's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a reason to make him your head coach,
right?
That doesn't make him a good head coach. And it's great that, you know, he has Pritchard back and vice versa.
He thinks he's a guy you can go in you're in the trenches with, right? I mean, that's what he's saying. And, you know, that's because they have a relationship that goes back to Portland. Maybe that means he also agrees with his vision.
You know, you don't just fire Nate without a plan. I think we all were willing to go a different way on a head coach, which is fine, but there was nobody in the wings who was blowing any of our minds, right? So I get keeping him if he's the best option available to you. I get the continuity in the organization, especially going into Paul George's, contract year. I get that stuff. So I'm not saying that it's not a good strategic decision, but that doesn't make him a great basketball mind. And head coach is not the only job in our organization.
You know, I tend to be patient with coaches. I think continuity does matter. I've been calling for Nate's head all year because I felt like we were better than a 500 team, which Nate acknowledged, which was nice of him.
Well, I'm glad he has a grip on reality. He's not totally detached from the fact that we won 42 games.
But my concern, I think, is the necessity to really prove to Paul George that we're making positive progression as a franchise. And I feel like finding the coach of the future would be one of those steps. I mean, Nate doesn't feel like the coach for the next, 10 years on our franchise,
No, I agree. Like I said, I'm more than willing to go a different way and, roll the dice on, an assistant coach that we like or, Becky Hammond or,
sure.
Chaka Smart. Go out there and find me somebody.
Brad Stevens, assistant coach. Or the guy that helped Brad Stevens become Brad Stevens. Can we find that guy?
Exactly. But that's just not going to happen. So the hope is that Paul George and Nate McMillan have a good rapport. Clearly, Nate McMillan did a horrible job coaching the playoffs. Like, it was just bad.
I would argue all season.
Yes, but it doesn't matter as much in the regular season.
It does when you only play 500 ball and get the seventh seed with the kind of talent we had. That matters.
Not as much as in the playoffs, right? You
sure.
can redeem a lot by having a good run in the playoffs.
Right.
And he did not do that, right? Sure. He had a new toy, and for some reason he was still starting Ellis. Not once, for two games.
Right.
before he figured out that we couldn't defend the
because pick and roll. His plus minus was terrible, and you could just basically the numbers black and white. I know you like pictures better than numbers, but it was right there. Like
pictures.
It was right there.
Pictures is great when they're moving. And you know, offensively, we did very little to take advantage of Kevin Love's defense. It was just a really inconsistent effort. You play all season to put yourself in a position to, you know, go out and compete. And sure, we had a tough draw, but paper, their head coach sucks.
Well, we showed well, I thought, in general. I mean, there were games we showed well in the sense that we only lost that entire series by 16 points. It's the least amount of points in a four game sweep ever. But there were real chances to win those games, and a lot of those things came from coaching.
That was the best sweep ever.
That's right. This will go down in history as the best sweep ever.
Yeah, that doesn't make me feel more good.
Does it make Paul George feel better?
No.
Well, so we're back to square one. We can't trade Paul George, and we can't really figure out the pieces to make him better. I hope Pritchard has a better plan, because we've talked extensively about the different options we have, and we can't really come up with anything that moves the needle.
No. I mean, obviously, we're going to need a good draft. I mean, we're just going to have to find a bit of a gem at 18. I just worry in situations like this that you give up some talent and upside for the help me now guy, you know? And I hope we don't do that and end up with Tyler Hansbrough again.
Sure.
You know?
Well,
or a Plumlee. Right. Are there more Plumlees? Tell me there's no more Plumlees out there.
I think there's probably more Plumlees.
There's an unlimited supply of Plumlees out there.
it's Miles and Madison and they all start with M.
Millie.
Monroe. Plumlee. They'll just keep coming.
And then there's Bill.
If we don't bring back Teague, which it sounds like it's a priority for Pritchard, if the numbers don't work, Lance Stephenson is your starting point guard.
Probably.
Yeah.
But, that leaves a hole in the middle of the lineup.
Well, I mean, you'd have it just leaves a hole on your bench. Basically, you got Lance starting at one, and then you got GR3 at two.
Mm-hmm. And you have no threes.
You've got no backup three, for sure.
Yeah.
Because Paul George is your starting three.
Because we've got five big guys who are all the same dude.
Lavoie Allen's going, whatever do to you?
Can't tell you apart from Serafin. You're all the same.
Well, I just continue to be nervous about this. It just feels like it's getting worse and worse.
I don't have the solution yet. I know we need to win at least 50 games next year.
Right.
However we get to that.
Well, and what you said to me is that the problem with needing to win 50 games is that it's a crapshoot, right? Because somebody could get injured, something can go wrong. And so if you're putting all your hopes in a 50-win season to keep Paul George, it's not a good plan.
That's the only plan. If you've got better plans, I'm all ears.
So, what is it? The draft is June 26th.
Sounds right.
We'll know a lot more by then. The finals will be over. The Cavs will have won in six games, according to me. And the Pacers will have an 18th pick, potentially move stuff around. Gosh. Oh, man. And then free agency starts July 1. You can start talking to guys, and you start signing guys July 7th.
It's going to be a busy week.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have to, Pritchard's going to have to show me something, pull something out of a hat. It's going to be a long off season.
I feel like it's been a while since we did something really good personnel-wise.
Yeah.
And
we liked the Thaddeus Young pickup.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah. We thought it was worth the 23rd pick or whatever we had.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't blow my mind, but it was, it was solid.
Sure.
But right now we're in a position where we need 50 wins and a mind-blowing personnel move. Like, that's just kind of where we're at. We're in desperation mode.
Pritchard's not getting a lot of sleep.
No.
All right. We should do a little undergoogleable. Don't you think? Because we're kind of sad now.
Got to bring it back. Bring it back.
Oh, are we doing undergoogleables?
That was the plan.
super excited.
You told us we had to, sir.
You said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
So, I'm on vacation this week, hanging out with Harper and Eugene. And didn't want to do a lot of work on finding a undergoogleable. But we were hanging out at the beach, and there was this fossil shop that had an electronic Tyrannosaurus Rex. And it was super freaking awesome.
It was pretty sweet.
It was really cool. It made me just want to go in there and buy a bunch of fossils. That was the point, right?
Yeah.
And we speculated that that was part of the business plan, right? Because, I mean, how much money are they making so much money that they can just buy an animatronic dinosaur and to put in the front door? Or do they put that as part of the business plan? You know, this is the key to our stores, have this.
Yeah, I think they found that, and they're like, what do we do with this? We're definitely buying it.
And then we'll make...
And then we'll figure out the business plan later.
I love this idea.
Like, oh yeah, fossil store.
You got it. How do we... Yeah, we have this animatronic dinosaur. How do we make money? So it's step one, animatronic dinosaur. Step two, figure out a business
question
plan.
Mark.
Step three, profit. Well, that got my mind going, and this is probably going to be one of the most undergoogleables ever. Okay, we're moving into the time of the year of the big summer blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Jurassic World came out a couple summers ago, mm-hmm. and that was the fourth highest grossing movie of all time. Okay, it was sort of a reboot of the Jurassic Park franchise, right?
Okay.
In that movie. I don't know if you've seen this movie.
Yeah, we did an under watchables.
Oh, right, we did. So Chris Pratt is the lead hero, and then there's like Dallas, Bryce.
Some... Oh, you know other people's names?
Her name, she's got like four names, and it's like...
Oh, that's
it's
right.
Dallas, Houston.
Dallas, Bryson, Houston.
Texas.
Montgomery, yeah.
The third.
The third.
And she's the lead along with Chris Pratt. And the park, Jurassic Park, has decided to that velociraptors and Tyrannosaurus Rexes aren't scary enough. So they genetically modify the scariest dinosaur you can possibly come up with, called the Indominus, right? And it's this huge thing. It's like twice as big as the T-Rex. And that was going to be their new attraction. Okay, so that's the plot.
They worked really hard on that.
How do we reboot this franchise? Yeah. The dinosaurs aren't amazing and scary and mystical and all these things enough. We just have to create something that wasn't real.
They had to expense a whole six pack of beer to come up with.
So my undergoogleable question to you is, how can this possibly be topped for Jurassic Park 5, which mm-hmm. comes out next summer? Mm-hmm. What is the plot of Jurassic World 2 or Jurassic Park 5 or whatever they call it?
So I'm thinking some synergy. There somehow the Alien Covenant is coming out, right?
Okay, sure.
So we can do a little cross marketing, and Jurassic Park 6 and Alien the third part will be the same movie. Okay. So instead of filling up the T-Rexes with Velociraptor DNA, it's going to be aliens.
Okay, sure. Those xenomorphs are scary.
Yeah.
They're very scary. So are they genetically like combining them? So you would have like a xenomorph T-Rex thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Like a face hugger? I don't think Spielberg owns... He doesn't own the Alien franchise.
Everybody wins in this one.
Okay, so they just come together.
They just come together.
Okay.
Everybody only has to do half the work.
It's like
they're just dialing these things in now.
So it's like Alien versus Predator, but it's Alien versus Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
This is not a terrible theory. I mean, they've already got a script. I think they're doing pre-production and filming. I think Chris Pratt and Dallas, Houston, Texas is coming back. So these things are already in the works. Do you think
script? Question mark.
Jurassic 5? Profit. All right. Well, that's not a bad theory. I was going to say, I mean, it's hard to top genetically modified scary dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. I was thinking they were going to go smaller. It's like, you know, like where they create like micro dinosaurs that like can invade your body. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
And then what was that movie with Martin Short where they had to drive a little vehicle inside his body? Do you remember that? That was a great idea.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
No, but...
No. Inner Space?
Inner Space, yeah. Both of those are great, you know, things. Yes. They could just go watch those two movies and then come up with mini dinosaurs.
Right.
Because they already went really big, right? So it would just go really small.
Yeah. That's very counter to... it's very anti-Spielbergian.
Sure. But can you imagine, like, there's the dinosaur, gets big inside of Chris Pratt's body and busts out. Explodes him. That would be pretty cool as the final scene, right?
Yeah. Well, this also plays back into my Alien theme too, right?
Sure, so, exactly.
It's where it just comes out of his chest. Okay. Just shoots right out.
Okay, this is good. So basically, when they crossbreed them, you get like a T-Rex sort of alien inside your stomach.
Yeah, yeah. So they've also already got, so they've got camouflage. They're giant. They're smarter because of the Velociraptor thing.
Right.
Also have to be amphibious now, too, right? A little shark DNA.
Well, because...
So they're like as good in the water as they are on land.
Because, spoiler alert, I think the last one, the Indominus, got eaten by a sort of a water animal. So basically to make him stronger so he doesn't get eaten by a water animal, he can now swim and fight underwater.
Nice.
That's good. All right, so we can't just have regular dinosaurs anymore. I mean, that's what they screwed up, right? So you can't go back to just a T-Rex and a Velociraptor.
No, they gave the Velociraptors lasers in the last one. It's tough to keep coming up with new stuff.
Sharks with lasers.
Lasers.
Well, they're clearly getting out into New York City, right, as well. You got to get off the island.
Right.
Now they can swim.
Now they can swim, so they can go wherever they want.
Yeah, sure.
So this is going to be the last one because they're taking over the world. Okay. They're unstoppable now.
Ooh, it could be like Planet of the Apes, where all the people are now dinosaurs.
It was Earth all along. spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. That's Well, you're welcome, Spielberg and whoever directed that movie and wrote that movie. You've got all the ideas you need to go ahead and get Jurassic 5 done for the big 2018.
All I gotta do is put it in the can. That's all I gotta do.
So the nice part about this is you can't actually Google what the current script for Jurassic 5 is. So Jurassic 5 is way cooler than Jurassic Park 5.
Yeah. J5. J5 Live. All right. Well, we did manage to dig up a stat of the week.
Even without Joey.
Trying to make it work without the host.
Joey, stat of the week!
This week, our stat of the week is that Isaiah Thomas, who had such a wonderful postseason this year before being injured, scheduled to make $6.3 million next year. The Celtics, who ended up with the number one overall draft choice via Brooklyn, because Brooklyn gives people free stuff.
You should move there.
Free stuff everywhere. It's all swag all the time. Their number one overall draft pick, assuming that he signs with the Celtics, will be making $7 million at 120% of the rookie scale. More than Isaiah Thomas. It seems not fair.
Something's slightly broken there.
Something is slightly broken.
The number one pick will be making more than Isaiah Thomas.
It takes a couple years for the player salaries to catch up with the new CBA. So obviously Isaiah Thomas signed his before his real breakout, first off, and second of all, before the new CBA. So
right. That's amazing. So he's come out and said that he's not going to be asking for an extension right now because he understands the team needs the financial flexibility to go out and get better players.
Yeah, he's saying obviously that he wants his payday, but it'll come when it comes, and you know he's proven himself. So his only concern now is trying to help the team get better. So he said publicly he's going to go out and help recruit if necessary, and be all that his team needs.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's some franchise player behavior.
Do you think Paul George is out there doing that?
I haven't heard that particular comment from Paul George.
I know that he's working out with Kobe this offseason. Which
is he going to come to the Pacers?
I don't think he's recruiting Kobe. Oh, I think okay. Kobe's probably in his ear every day being like,
oh, he's going... being recruited.
Yes. Now, I don't think you can technically be recruited, but, you know. Actually, Kobe doesn't
work for anybody.
Exactly. You're right. So basically, he's going to talk to him all the time about how great the franchise is and how he could be the next Kobe and all this stuff.
You could be the next me. Is that a sentence that people say?
You could be me.
You could be the next me.
So that would be, that's bad for the franchise. I think that active recruiting is probably going on as we speak.
Seems not ideal for us.
Because, I mean, even if we all think that he's sort of leaning to go to L.A., you know, he has talked about wanting to bring a championship to Indiana. It sounds like he does love Indiana. But if you're out playing with your idol every day, and every day your idol is talking about how amazing L.A. is and how amazing the Lakers are, mm-hmm. that's going to be really tough to turn down.
Sure. I mean, it is. And the reality is, I mean, I think you're right. I think Paul George is still on the fence in some sense. Yeah. I think he's just not sure what he's going to do. It's going to be awfully hard for him to turn down, you know, $210 million if he makes an All-NBA team. You know, there's certainly still stuff that we don't know about how this plays out. It's a big decision for a guy to make, but
sure.
L.A.'s probably fun. It's probably a fun place to live if you're young, attractive, and rich.
Yeah, I would think so. Oh, well, that was sad. We were supposed
to go someplace else with that. No, I think we end up here.
We're happy for Isaiah Thomas. He sounds like he's a good franchise player. It sounds like, it could be that Boston pays him down the road, or it could be that they decide not to pay him, but Isaiah's been a good soldier this year.
He's been a great soldier, and he's certainly proven himself to the league, and if there were any doubters left, I think that this playoff run should quiet the critics for... at least an offseason.
For sure.
The difficult thing for the Celtics, of course, is that they are going to have to make a decision about Thomas. And he's 32 years old, even though he hasn't been playing at this level for 10 years.
Right.
He certainly deserves his payday now. But do you want, a 36-year-old Isaiah Thomas...
making $40 million a year?
$40 million cap hit. I mean, do you think that Thomas is willing to be a microwave? Just, like, come off the bench and light the league on fire?
Sure. Here's your $25 million a year for what you've done for this franchise. You're one of the highest bench players in the league, but you're going to be the little water bug off the bench. You know, instant offense. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Oh, God. Well... just another team to contend with in the East.
Yeah. I wish I had Brad Stevens.
Maybe you could trade Paul George for him.
Is he on the trade block?
I don't think he's on the trade block, but you'd say, hey, look, you don't want to give up your one pick? I'll take Jaylen Brown and Brad Stevens.
I'm in.
We can dream. Do we have Game of the Week?
Game of the Week!
Game of the Week.
Game of the Week is probably game one.
Yeah. What are you looking for?
I am interested to see what the Cavs come out and try and do early. I assume that their first game plan will be to make Curry defend pick and rolls.
Right.
And isolate him like they did last year and beat the hell out of him.
Yeah, I think a good counter to that is Kevin Durant, right?
Do you have a prediction for... Is game one a must-win for the Cavs?
I'm not saying it's a must-win, but I think... I mean, I think everybody's going, hey, they got to steal one of the first two on the road. I don't think that at all. I think, actually, if the Cavs can hold court, they can get blown out in the first two games. They have to win their two games at home. At that point, you're in a three-game series. Now...
And you just got blown out twice on the road.
Well, I'm not saying it's a good strategy. What I'm saying is, my point is, I don't think game one is a must win. I think they have to be going into game five tied 2-2. Right? They're not going to come back from 3-1 again. It's not in the cards. But I think at that point, you've got the best player on the planet, who's got to win, two out of three. Right? And Yeah, two of them are on the road, but I wouldn't... If I had to play LeBron James three times and have to win two of them, I wouldn't feel good about that.
Do you think that the Cavs are confident that they're going to win this series? You know LeBron is.
Mm-hmm.
You know Kyrie is, because he thinks the Earth's flat, so he's just an unreasonable human.
Completely delusional.
Completely delusional. But Kevin Love came out and said that the underdog label for the Cavs was ridiculous because they're defending champs. But does he know it's not that ridiculous?
Hey, if that locker room is believing that they can win this thing,
my question is, do they? Because Kevin Love has to say that. Does he really believe? Does Kevin Love believe that he's going to win a championship this year? In his heart of hearts.
Yeah, I don't know what he thinks in the dark moments, in the wee hours of the night.
I think the Cavs know where they're at. I think that they know that they're underdogs. They're supposed to lose the first two games. So I don't think it really changes the math very much. Like you said, if they lose, you know, one or both of the first two, now they can't get blown out.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that just hurts your confidence. But do you feel like a game one win by the Cavs, if let's say that you know, Golden State's rusty in the first half mm-hmm. or something and they can take advantage of that, does that change your prediction at all, or do you still feel like the Cavs would have a statistically a better chance at that point? They'd have home court.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that changes the series for you?
For me, it's really the only way that I can see them
winning.
You know, they're going to have to put Golden State behind the eight ball. They're going to have to make them play from behind in this series, right? It's just always tougher to win a championship that way, right? Not only do you have the statistical pad of being up a game, but I think it does do something to confidence, right? And if Golden State has a weakness, it's overconfidence, right? I mean, and that leads to turnovers and, you know, going back to last year, silly passes from Stephen Curry that end up in the third row.
Sure.
You know, these things happen with the Warriors sometimes. And they do so many great things, it's hard to really fault them.
They're having fun playing basketball.
They're having fun playing basketball, and it works. But in close games, it can cost you something, right? So I think the Cavs really need to go out and make a statement in game one. They're not. I don't see how they take both. I think it's hard. It's going to be awfully hard for them to win three in a row, right? So winning game two, I don't know, gets them that much, right? So I feel like they got to win one, three, and four, right?
Okay. Well, that's
their road.
Yeah. That means, I think, that you'd have to have a great game plan going in, right? So LeBron is working on that as we speak, because they've got to do something that's
two game plans. First half, second half.
Right. Because Kerr and Mike Brown and the rest of them will figure out how to counterpunch and respond. So you've got to come up with something they haven't seen before.
You can't say they have to be perfect, but they're going to have to play almost up to their 100% potential in order to steal a series from a team that's playing as well as the Warriors are.
Well, we look forward to it. That'll be June 1st. The only game's being played now. That's why it's the game of the week.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that, I think, is our show for this week. You can find us at theundebeatables.com. Anywhere you find podcasts, feel free to write a review for us. And hit us with any critiques at Undebeatables on Twitter, or shout out at undebeatables.com.
And a special shout out to Japan. Send us in your questions. Apparently got a huge following in Japan.
Maybe a bunch of our people are just on vacation in Japan right now.
Hmm. Maybe there's a huge, like, underground Pacer fan base in Japan.
I assume that's the case.
Right. That really like nerdy podcasts.
That sounds like a thing to me.
We also have t-shirts in the Schmedium variety. If you like t-shirts. Harper, you're rocking one right now.
Yes.
Looks good.
Feeling comfortable, looking good.
You can get that on our website. Again, happy Memorial Day. Hope you're all enjoying the day. And shout out to those who serve and veterans.
Yeah, shout out to the troops.
Yep, for sure. For our once and always coach, Bobby Slick Leonard, turn out the lights. The party's over.